Wind advisory will go into effect this afternoon at 2 o'clock and run until 8 p.m. this evening. The forecast for East Central Illinois this afternoon, occasional showers and thunderstorms. Some storms may be severe. We'll see a high in the upper 50s, becoming very windy. The wind from the southeast at 5 to 10 miles per hour. This afternoon, the wind will be from the southwest and increase to 20 to 25 miles per hour with gusts to 45 miles per hour. Tonight, mostly cloudy, very windy. There's a chance of showers this evening. Expect a low around 30. The wind from the west at 25 to 30 miles per hour with gusts to around 45 miles per hour early. Then after midnight, decreasing to 15 to 20 miles per hour with gusts to 30. Tomorrow, partly sunny, blustery, and much cooler. The high tomorrow, 40. The wind will be out of the west from 20 to 25 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy with a low in the upper 20s. The wind from the west at 10 to 15 miles per hour with evening gusts to 25 miles per hour. Sunday mostly cloudy with a chance of rain or snow. Look for a high in the upper 30s with the wind from the west at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Sunday night mostly cloudy with a low in the mid 20s. And the outlook for Monday mostly sunny with a high in the low 40s. At noon Central Time, temperatures across Illinois and Indiana ranged from the upper 30s to the mid-60s, 39 degrees at both Rockford and O'Hare, where it was cloudy. In Bloomington, partly sunny, 46 degrees. Mattoon reported light rain and 50. In Carbondale, 64 and partly sunny. South Bend reported light rain and 41 degrees at the top of the hour. Lafayette, a thunderstorm and 45 degrees. In Indianapolis and Terre Haute, cloudy, 54 at Indy, 64 at Terre Haute. Willard Airport reported 48 degrees at the top of the hour, a cloudy sky. The dew point 46, the relative humidity 93%, the wind out of the east at 17, the barometric pressure 29.31 and falling. And at 12:39, 51 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois. Interest in natural gas vehicles soared in the 1990s when gas prices went up, but when gas prices fell, that interest faded. 20 years later, the cost of gasoline is going up while the cost of natural gas is going down, and that difference in price explains the resurgent interest in natural gas vehicles. Steve Walsh from Lakeshore Public Radio in Merrillville, Indiana, has more.
Fair Oaks Dairy Farm does a lot more than just produce milk. They're also in the transportation business. The farm owns 60 trucks, which deliver milk to a processor halfway across the state. Last September, most of the trucks were converted to natural gas. Joel Roman is one of the drivers.
It's great. I think it's kind of changed the economy on how we use natural gas and how we fuel our trucks.
How much different is it to fuel it with natural gas than it would be, let's say, just diesel?
Well, it's a lot easier and cleaner. I don't get messy hands.
The dairy is in step with larger companies like AT&T and UPS, which have already recently added natural gas to their trucking fleets. 20 years ago, federal incentives and high gas prices led fleet managers to retrofit thousands of light trucks and city buses to use compressed natural gas as a fuel. But the boom didn't last long. Rich Koloje is president of NGV America, a trade association that lobbies for the use of natural gas in vehicles. He says there hasn't been this much interest since the early 1990s, when stations popped up around the country.
There was enthusiasm. Even Amoco started building some public stations, and they just put them on the corner using the "if we build it, they will come" model. Didn't work, and they didn't come.
There is a big white container that sits empty on the lot of Gary, Indiana's public bus service. It used to contain 15,000 gallons of liquid natural gas. Maintenance director John Dutton says the fueling station hasn't been used in over a decade, and the city buses that used natural gas were eventually scrapped.
They'd have a bus out here, from what I understand, for hours just trying to get fuel in it. Then they finally weren't able to get it operating right. You know.
There's some important differences in the market today versus the 90s.
Greg Rausch is with Clean Energy Fuel Corporation, which wants to build a countrywide network of natural gas fueling stations.
The economics today are far better than they have ever been since natural gas began as an option in the transportation market. And the reason for that is the price of oil is high, and it's going to stay high, and We have an incredible abundance of natural gas in this country, so the price is cheap.
Rouse said concerns over climate change are also driving demand. Natural gas produces 20 to 30% fewer carbon emissions than diesel. New trucks that run on compressed natural gas cost 35% more than comparable diesel trucks, says Mark Storman of Fair Oaks Dairy Farms. Government incentives bring the cost down, and Storman says eventually the trucks will pay for themselves.
How much is a gallon of regular unleaded selling for right now?
Well, across the road at the BP station, I think it says $3.89, and we're selling for $2.59, so $1.30 less per gallon.
And that's the bottom line difference driving interest in natural gas vehicles, at least for now. For NPR News in Fair Oaks, Indiana, I'm Steve Walsh.
Illinois is known for nuclear energy. In fact, it has the most nuclear power plants in the U.S. But times are changing, and the state is trying to change with them. Wind farms are dotting the landscape, and wind power is even making its way into school curricula. Kelsey Wolf reports.
An Illinois wind energy pilot program will be offered at three schools, and others can still apply. The program is free of charge through the Illinois Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity. One of the schools in the program is Cuba Middle and Senior High in Fulton County. Middle school science teacher Julie Thompson-Vass has completed training for the program. She's now ready to begin teaching it along with the high school science and agriculture teachers.
Oh, yes. I think all three of us are pretty excited about all of the activities that we saw. It has many different things that we can use, whether it's the wind energy, we can implement stuff in the math classroom, the ag classroom, the science classroom. So it could be used anywhere for anything.
Students will learn about wind energy, engineering, economics, and the environment. How? High school agriculture teacher Doug Falk says they will use miniature turbine kits supplied through the program.
To talk about turbine speeds and heights and the construction of the actual propeller, so they can do a lot of physical and applications type of experiments in the classroom.
The kits contain cardboard, dowel rods, and other materials. Walk through Cuba Middle Senior High and you'll see much that is familiar. Students crowd the hallways between classes, some huddle around lockers, but if you look a little closer, you'll see this school is different in many ways. It's filled with green innovations. The school uses solar panels for power. It has a geothermal heating and cooling system. The building itself is made of local limestone. Head outside and you'll discover rainwater collected in cisterns for irrigation purposes, and you'll find a football field with turf made from recycled tires. Science teacher Brandon Reynolds believes all of these features can inspire students to learn about new developments in science and technology.
It's becoming readily apparent that we can't continue to rely on petroleum resources for energy. And as our students grow older, they will have more exposure to these technologies. And so having all this stuff right here on our campus has been a great benefit.
He hopes students will now gain additional inspiration from the wind energy program. Cuba principal Chad Willis considers the program a valuable addition to the school experience.
And we think this is a great opportunity for our kids to, in terms of something they can apply later on in life.
Western Illinois University and Illinois State University are participating in the program by providing equipment and assistance. Cuba's students will visit ISU to learn from scientists and engineers who work with wind turbines, and college students will come to the Cuba school
and run through these different labs and activities and things with the students.
This is Jolene Willis. She is with the Illinois Institute for Rural Affairs at Western Illinois University and is married to Cuba principal Chad Willis.
The students then are also aware of the different higher and ed and also vocational opportunities out there, either in wind energy and energy in general, so that they can really get a comprehensive view from just the academic part, but also into the career exploration.
The future of Illinois energy is still unclear, but a change to alternatives might mean fewer cooling towers across the state and more turbines. The Illinois Wind Energy Program ends at Cuba Middle and Senior High in spring of next year, but that might not be the end of the school's involvement with wind energy. Principal Chad Willis says they're studying whether to install a full-size turbine. I'm Kelsey Wolf.
Before he wrote his multi-volume biography of Abraham Lincoln, Illinois-born poet Carl Sandburg honored the minting of the Lincoln penny with his 1909 essay, Lincoln for Pennies. The humble penny is now being used in a campaign to preserve Sandburg's birthplace in the western Illinois town of Galesburg. Jim Lenz reports.
Students at Heading Elementary School in Abington burn off some of their boundless energy during gym class. Fortunately for them, they saved some of it for channeling into the penny parade. During the campaign, the school students collected more pennies than any other participating Knox County school. The children had only 1 week to collect the money. Some, such as fourth grader Lucas Tinkham, tapped an old, reliable money source.
I just, got all the change out of my piggy bank and went from there.
Pam Fouch teaches one of the two fourth grade classes at Heading. She says the two classes took the lead in organizing the school's effort.
The kids really took the challenge, and over $635 for the whole school was really an awesome response to the challenge.
Susan Dehorati is the school's other fourth grade teacher. She says there was a lot of tension in her class the day students counted the pennies they collected.
And so they were very excited, and especially they kept wondering, well, did we win? Did we win? As we were counting all day. And so then I told them that we did.
Her students collected more pennies than any other class at the school, $125 worth. That's an average of 500 pennies per student. The countywide campaign collected just a shade more than $1,900 from eight schools. A former Heading school principal who now serves on the board for the Carl Sandburg State Historic Site in Galesburg says the money will help. But Stan Shover feels the cash might not be the most valuable contribution from the penny parade.
I think more than the money, putting it out into the public's view again. There's a lot of people in Galesburg, I think, that just said, oh, well, it's just another thing that's going to be gone.
Shover says the fundraiser began in 1960, but interest waned until recently. He says this year's campaign rekindled memories and interest.
It was just amazing how many adults came up to me the day that the kids brought their pennies in. I said, I remember 20 years ago, or 30 or 40, when I used to collect pennies, you know.
Shover says it's unfortunate that Sandburg, who won three Pulitzer Prizes, is best known for having his name on a college, a mall, and a street in Galesburg. That is about all a group of Heading School students knew before they delivered the pennies to the poet's birthplace.
He wrote music and stuff, and he had a guitar thing.
He used to be a firefighter.
Yes, actually, I learned that he was a famous poet, and I knew about the Carl Sandburg College and all that. I just didn't know how good of a person he was.
I forgot most of it.
Those are fourth graders Zach Redding, Abby Tinkham, Lucas Tinkham, and Kerrigan Martin. Stan Shover hopes the annual Penny Parade campaign will encourage those students to learn more about Sandburg. He also hopes it generates renewed interest in the Sandburg site, although there are some concerns about its future. Shover says Pam Fouch asked if the students would be able to tour it this spring. He says due to state budget cuts, it's not known whether the birthplace of Carl Sandburg will be open to the public this year. I'm Jim Lenz.
WILL programs are made possible by the Champaign Park District, presenting Gaelic Storm at the historic Virginia Theater. Known for their appearance as the Celtic Party Band in the movie Titanic, Gaelic Storm appears at the Virginia Tuesday, March 6th at 7:30 p.m. More information is at 356-9063 or at thevirginia.org.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 2nd of March, 2012. It's the birthday of Tom Wolfe, born Richmond, Virginia, 1931, author of The Electric Kool-Aid Acid Test, The Right Stuff about the American Space Program, and his novels, The Bonfire of the Vanities, A Man in Full, I Am Charlotte Simmons, his fourth novel, Back to Blood, due out this year. Tom Wolfe wrote an essay a few years back arguing that the newspaper industry would stand a better chance of survival if newspapers encouraged reporters to provide the emotional reality of the news by using four literary devices in their work to make the reader feel present in the scene. First of all, to construct scenes, and second, to use dialogue, lots of it, and to note the details of social status, dress and furniture and speech, and to employ point of view in order to put the reader inside the mind of someone other than the writer. It's the birthday of John Irving, Born John Wallace Blunt, Jr. in Exeter, New Hampshire, 1942. His parents divorced when he was two. He never heard from his father again. Mother remarried and gave him his stepfather's last name, Irving. Wrote three books that were critical successes but didn't sell well, but his fourth did, The World According to Garp, 1978, about the fatherless son of a radical feminist, the absence of a parent, especially the father, a recurring theme in Irving's work. And it's the birthday of Sholem Aleichem, born in Ukraine, 1859, wrote in Yiddish, gave us the character Tevye the Milkman, whose stories inspired the musical Fiddler on the Roof. Sholem Aleichem, who said, "Life is a dream for the wise, a game for the fool, a comedy for the rich, a tragedy for the poor." Here's a poem for today by Wendell Berry in our